N.E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, we'll speak with a former Republican legislator who's now a political independent and a newspaper columnist. Our guest is Paula Dockery. We're going to talk about the legislative session, the still mysterious Russian hacking of two Florida counties in the 2016 election, and her recent column on the incarceration of children. Also be taking your phone calls. Paula Dockery lives in Lakeland. She served as a member of the Florida Senate for 10 years, representing parts of Central Polk County from 2002 to 2012. Prior to that, she served three terms in the Florida House of Representatives, representing a Lakeland-based district from 1996 until her election to the Florida Senate. In January 2017, she left the Republican Party and became an independent. Paula Dockery writes a column every other week for the Florida Sun Sentinel newspaper, which is widely carried. The column is widely carried by newspapers across the state, and she's a graduate of the University of Florida. And Paula Dockery, welcome back to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Great to be here.
So, Paula, there's so much in politics I want to ask you about, but just recently you wrote a column about the incarceration of children, and I want to start there. You're really concerned about what's going on in the Chrome area, in the Homestead area south of Miami, where kids who have been separated from their parents or came here without parents to the border are now being incarcerated. What's your concern?
Well, I did focus on Homestead in my last column, but it's really a nationwide problem of these facilities all over the country. And it's, you know, regardless of what you think about our immigration policy, once those children are in our custody, in the United States custody, I think we need to treat them a little better and separating them from their family. It's now getting more attention. I just read some national news that talked about the youngest that was separated was 4 months old, and the father was waiting on a plane to go back and to take the child with him, and he refused to board the plane, and they said, no, go get your seat and we'll bring him to you. And he got on the plane and they took off without bringing him his child.
Wow.
So when people are saying, well, you know, we're separating them because they were over here illegal, they're illegal kids. Well, first of all, the kids aren't illegal. It may be against a policy, but to brand a child illegal is ridiculous and very disturbing, especially to somebody who thinks that we need to treat all humans with humanity. And so when they say, well, they need to go home with the child, there's a perfect example of they were trying to go home with their child, and we kept that child, and we kept him separated at 4 months old from his family.
Now, some people are saying, the people that are supporting the incarceration say these facilities are nice. They're brightly lit, and they're not like prison cells. What would you say?
I've seen pictures to show otherwise. There have been congressmen and women who have gone in, and even reporters that come out and say, no, they're cages, they're bad, they're sleeping on the floor, they're on these foil using these foil blankets. Some have been denied their medical care. Seven have died in our custody. And for other Congress, there were three congresswomen from South Florida that tried to get into the Homestead facility and were turned away. Why would you turn them away? What are you hiding? What don't you want them to see? So they can say what they want, but the people who have seen it firsthand, even after they cleansed the scene for them, come back with a totally different perception.
One of these children was held in a van for 39 hours?
Yeah, yeah. And the rest of them were released a little bit sooner, but some of them, a good portion of them were, a good number of them were 22 hours, and then the last one was 39 hours. And the people on shift were just saying, well, my shift's over, I'm going home, while these kids were sitting out in a van in the parking lot.
We wouldn't treat animals that way.
No, we wouldn't.
Or we'd be outraged if somebody treated their dog that way.
We'd be in jail. Yeah. You know, they'd bust the window open.
Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. This Homestead facility where these kids are being housed, this is a for-profit facility.
It is.
Yeah.
And recently, it was reported at the national level that former Chief of Staff Kelly has a financial interest in that, and something's a little unsavory about that as well.
And in your column, the Trump administration's outrageous treatment of kids, you say that the facility is being paid $775 per child. Is that per day? Or what's it, $775 per child?
Per day, yeah.
Per day.
Yeah.
That's an enormous amount of money.
It is. And to be perfectly honest, I took that from a newspaper source and didn't do any checking on my own. So I don't know how they, you know, took that full dollar amount and came up with that, because the facility has a maximum capacity of 1,600 kids. And sometimes it was over 2,000 kids that were there. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure if they're taking the amount and dividing it by the 1,600 or actually counting the actual kids that were there each of those days.
If that number holds up, I would venture to say that that's more than we spend on housing prisoners here in the state of Florida, $775 per day.
It is. Our average for prisoners, since I chaired the Criminal Justice Committee, was $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the older the prisoner, the more expensive. If it's a woman, it's more expensive, and that has more to do with the health care.
And that's, if my quick math is right, that's less than $100 a day. I got to do the math. Where's my calculator? We're talking with former State Senator Paula Dockery, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. You ask in the column, where's the outrage? Because apparently people don't care.
You know, I listen to a lot of cable news, probably more than most. And we have the same news, and it's always about President Trump over and over. We talk about his tweets. We say what's in his mind. And yet we're not covering the real news. We're not covering the fact that 7 children died. We're not covering the fact that bills are passing out of the House that are dying in the Senate. And so the point of the column was really to say, You're probably not outraged because you probably don't know what's going on. And this is going on. And even though it's a national issue, a really bad part of it is happening here in the state of Florida. And even though it is a national issue, Governor DeSantis could get involved. He could say, this isn't what we're going to do. The congresswomen who are trying to get in there should be let in there. And so it's just and there is a federal law that says that in this temporary facility that Homestead is, you're not supposed to keep that child more than 20 days. And they are. And I don't know how they're getting away. We're getting away with that.
You also point out that this facility is not licensed by the state of Florida. So who makes sure that the conditions inside are adequate?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. I don't mean to mislead into, it's supposed to be. According to the law with these temporary holding facilities, they're not required to be. But it is a problem when we are keeping them longer and nobody's really regulating other than the federal agency that's allowing all this bad stuff to happen.
All right. So one of our great listeners said, if you're spending $20,000 a year on a prisoner, they did the calculation, it's $54.79 a day, much less than what you point out is $775 per child per day.
Sure.
In Homestead. Former State Senator Paula Dockery is here. We're talking about all things Florida right now. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Well, you talked about the president. The president is going to be in Orlando tonight, kicking off his reelection campaign. And you were a Republican for a long time.
All my life.
All your life.
Until Inauguration Day.
And was it President Trump that made you leave the party?
Yes, that was the final straw. But there's, over the course of my time in the legislature, there was more of a move. I was a Reagan Republican. I was, you know, let's do things for everybody. Let's recognize that the people who elected us aren't the only people we're representing, that we're representing all the people of the state of Florida. And there was just a growing anger and hatred, and whenever I was in a Republican caucus, there was always this vitriol against Barack Obama, who was president, or Hillary Clinton. And if you didn't hate them as much as everybody else in the room hated them, you were a rhino, or you were getting soft, and I wasn't in it to hate people, and I just found that to be a very uncomfortable position to be in.
I wonder if you think the same thing goes on in the Democratic Party, that if people, and you're not a Democrat, you're an independent, but I wonder if you think the Democrats do the same thing.
I think that they do in terms of when it comes to election time, but the day-to-day vitriol that the Republicans were stoked up with, I didn't see that on the Democratic side.
Just going back to the question of undocumented immigrants, especially from South America, from Mexico, from Central America, you for a long time represented parts of Polk County in the legislature. Did you know many people who had come here from Mexico or from Central America? Did you meet many of these people in your district as constituents?
Not as much in Polk County, although there was a large South American and Central American population that would move with the farming as the crops were being done. And actually, when I was in the legislature, a lot of Republicans were understood that Florida's crops did need that migrant labor, so there wasn't such a strong move to close off the immigration because, as they said, people who were here, U.S. citizens, didn't want that job. It's hard work, and it doesn't pay well, and that's the point. If you get to a certain amount of pay, people will do unpleasant work, but in this rain, in this heat, in this humidity, with low wages, there aren't that many people who are saying, "Yeah, pick me. I want to go pick some crops."
Have you talked to farmers in Polk County who now are having trouble finding people to harvest their crops?
Oh, sure, yeah. And it wasn't as much Polk County. I was starting to say it was. I had Osceola County in my district as well, and there was a large population of Hispanics that weren't Cuban, and so they vote a little bit differently than they do in Polk County. Remember, when I first ran for office in 1996, there were no Democrats winning office in Polk County. And I'm sorry, there weren't any Republicans winning office in Polk County. And now it's such a Republican stronghold in an I-4 corridor that's turning more and more blue between Tampa and Orlando.
You were born up north. You were born in New York.
I was born in New York, but my family moved to Florida, South Florida, when I was six. So I'm really, you know, as far as I remember,
you might as well be
Floridian,
a native.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of, back then, we were talking about Dixiecrats. They were a registered Democrat, but they tended to vote Republican,
right,
back
like
in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
Yeah. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. So I just want to ask you about the 2016 election. I was headed in the direction of President Trump. You wrote a really interesting column about the 2016 election, and I think one of the mysteries that's out there is that the Mueller report says that two Florida counties were hacked by the Russians during the 2016 election. That's a fact, and all of our top elected officials have been briefed on this, yet we as the citizens of Florida don't know which two counties were hacked. Do you have any insight as to which counties were hacked?
No, and actually what the Mueller report said was at least one. And then we've heard since then from the people who won't give us much more information than that it was two. But I have long suspected in 2018 that there was some nefarious activity in South Florida. It's mostly a gut feeling, but there are some troubling signs. And I think we're going to find out that something happened in Broward County in 2018.
All right, so Broward is a big Democratic stronghold. You've got maybe circumstantial evidence, if we could call it that. What are the indications that you have that something untoward might have happened in Broward County?
What makes me suspicious is, number one, you have a congressman named Matt Gaetz, who's from the Panhandle, who was down in Broward County and riling people up and accusing the Broward supervisor of elections of moving ballots. And he was on some airport tarmac and taking pictures of machines being moved.
Was this on or after Election Day?
It was during the recount. It was
during
right
the
after the Election Day. Roger Stone, the dirty trickster, is from Broward County. He was down there also stirring things up at that time. The then governor, Rick Scott, was constantly harping on the election supervisor down there. They were asking for so many things of her while she was trying to do the recount to just kind of muddy up the waters. And then he fires her after she announces she's resigning the first of the year, and then sends in his henchman, and that's my word, his henchman, who every time he has a problem at an agency, he sent Pete Antonacci in. And so Pete is supposed to be an expert on all these different areas that he sent him in. He had him fire the FDLE director. He put him in at the Water Management District. And then he puts him in to the Broward County Supervisor of Elections office when he has zero experience with that.
Zero experience running an elections office.
But he puts him in there. And so that to me was suspicious in that, what's he trying to hide or cover up? Why does he want this woman out 5 weeks before she was going to go out anyway? And why did he put in that particular guy instead of an experienced supervisor, retired supervisor of elections from somewhere else?
Do we know how if the Russians got in somehow, what could they have done? What's the worst that they could have done? If your imagination would go to the extreme, what?
Well, I'm not even sure it's the Russians getting in. It could be that somebody within that office was not counting certain votes. They were maybe ignoring some of the absentee ballots. You know, we don't know what happened. And again, this is a gut feeling based on knowing some of the players and questioning some of their behavior.
Most of the margins of victory for the Republicans during the 2018 election were razor thin.
Razor thin. They all, yeah. Three of them went to a manual recount. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you pick a large county where the Democrats are getting 65% of the vote, you don't even have to change 0.2% of a vote, and it would be very hard to decipher that.
Okay, so I misspoke. You're really raising questions about the 2018 election.
I am.
Okay, and I said 2016.
Well,
I apologize.
Well, that too. I mean, the 2016 is more about what the Mueller report is referring to. The 2018, to me, was about the recount and those really close ballots, ballot counts that seemed to go against all the polling.
There were 80,000 mysterious ballots that showed up after the election. Talk about that for a moment. How does that play into your concerns about the validity of the Broward count?
I don't know that much about that, but what did concern me is when U.S. Senator Bill Nelson said before the election that there was some evidence that the system was breached, and the media jumped on him and insisted he show it. And of course, he couldn't show it because he was having the same briefing that Governor DeSantis and U.S. Senator Rick Scott got after the election, and they're still not even telling us what they heard. So I think that the media treated him pretty unfairly, and I think that may have actually hurt him, and he lost by, 0.2%?
Yeah, his credibility was being questioned right when he raised that issue.
And then on top of that, in one of the counties in South Florida, and I can't remember if it was Broward or Palm Beach, the design of the ballot had him at the bottom, and there were so many ballots where everything was voted on except for that. So they think that the design of the ballot made people overlook that was there. So I mean, he really got a bum deal at this last election.
Undercount in that U.S. Senate race. Well, former State Senator Paula Dockery is here. She's now a newspaper columnist, and you can read her columns in many newspapers statewide. How many newspapers carry your column?
I think I'm in 8 or 9.
All right. I know the Tampa Bay Times carries it. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you've got a question for former State Senator Paula Dockery, you can call us up. She was widely known for her bipartisan appeal when she was in the state legislature. And you worked across party lines.
Yeah, there were a few of us. Mike Fasano, Dennis Jones, myself.
That no longer happens.
Not much, no.
Why do you think that is?
You know, it didn't used to be so bad at the state level as at the national level, but I think it's because the numbers got so big and there was no real need to compromise and no desire to compromise, and just the general ugliness of the tribalism of politics now. And, you know, I will say this, when Ron DeSantis got elected, he really had a big honeymoon period where people were giving him the benefit of the doubt and saying, you know, he's a lot better than Rick Scott, which I think so. I think he's better than Rick Scott, too. I think that was a pretty low bar. But he's pushing through stuff that Republicans have wanted to push through for a long time that have been controversial, but they have such large numbers now, they just push stuff through.
And, such as?
Well, the education policy with vouchers, now it's just, you know, straight out, we're going to put money straight to vouchers.
We're taking general revenue money for vouchers. This is the first time we've done it.
Where in the past, they would try and say it was for a specific underserved segment and to get it to pass constitutional muster. The courts, how many, you know, conservatives now on the court, so now they know that, or they think, or they hope that when these policies that ordinarily would have been ruled unconstitutional get to the Florida Supreme Court, they'll be held up. So it just seems like Florida's taken, because of their wins at the ballot box, is taking a hard turn right.
You talked about the numbers being so big. When you say numbers being so big, are you talking about political donations, or are you talking about the districts being solidly Republican or solidly Democrat?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Senate majority and the House majority. They, in the past, when I was first elected in 1996, it was 61-59 in the House. So every member's vote counted. And so if you had a Republican member who said, hey, this isn't good for my district, they'd say, what do we need to change? And you would kind of modify the bill so that it's better for everybody, because I had a very Democratic district when I was first elected. Now they don't have to do that because they've got 79 members. They can afford to lose 15, 16, you know, 20 of you. And so there's not a willingness or need to compromise.
This question came up yesterday on this radio show. Do you think we had the Fair Votes Amendment or Fair Voting Amendment or Fair Districts Amendment, I'm sorry, and those were passed that would try to take some of the politics out of drawing congressional districts and state legislative districts. Do you think that we still have a gerrymandering problem in the state of Florida?
Yes. And what happened was the Fair District Amendment passed, and then after that passed, the legislature had the opportunity to draw the districts. And the minority party is really left out completely. And so the majority party, which in Florida is Republican, they drew the districts for Congress, Senate, and House. And usually they leave the House to the House members to draw, the Senate to the Senate members to draw, and then they both work on the congressional districts. Well, when they were passed, they favored incumbents, of course, even though they weren't supposed to. And then some groups, the League of Women Voters and Common Cause, took them to court. So even though it's law, even though it's in the Constitution, the districts don't have to be fair unless somebody's willing to spend the money and the time to go to court to fight them. And they chose to fight over the congressional districts and the Senate districts, but left the House districts alone. That didn't mean the House districts were fair. It just meant they had to concentrate on the worst offenders. And so the courts required the districts to be redrawn. But when you're messing with just a few districts, there's not that much you can do to fix them without going into the other districts. So the fix wasn't as good a fix because it was focused on a few districts instead of the whole statewide system. And then the same with the Senate districts. You know, for instance, a Senate district's 550,000 people. Polk County's 600,000 people. And instead of having most of Polk County, and that being my district, I had a piece of Polk County, as well as did two other senators. I had a piece of Osceola, a piece of Hernando, a piece of Sumter, and a piece of Lake. I didn't even have Pasco. So to get from my home in Polk to my district in Hernando, I had to go through a county that wasn't even part of my district. Mm. That doesn't serve anybody well. Those people can't really visit me very easily. I can't really go visit them very easily. So it just makes more sense to keep those districts, you know, along county lines, along city lines. And so people know who their representative is, and to the greatest extent, so their representative lives near them and understands the issues that face them.
Now, next year, there will be a U.S. Census, and after the census comes out with its numbers, there will be another round of redistricting all across the country, including here in Florida. This time around, if somebody challenges the district lines, we've got a Florida Supreme Court that is entirely different than it was a few years ago.
Right, right?
And what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, that's a great big question mark. But the other thing is, who can afford to challenge them? That was in court for well over a year. And then once the maps were drawn again, they went back and challenged those. So it takes money. And people don't really donate to that kind of cause because it, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of people that are altruistic out there that are going to willing to fund the entire effort. They may throw a little bit of money at it, but most people get involved when there's some financial stake in their behalf. So it's hard to raise the money and to get a group, but thank God for the League of Women Voters and Common Cause who said, hey, wait a minute, the voter spoke. You ignored their wishes, and, you know, we're going to challenge you on this. Back in 1996, 2000, maybe even 2005, 6, when people got called out on things, there was this feeling of shame, and that was a powerful factor to get people not to behave in bad ways. There's no shame left. And so shaming people like, you drew bad districts last time, don't do that again, it doesn't work. They're going to do what they can get away with.
We're talking with former state representative and former state senator Paula Dockery, and she's live in the studio. This is WMNF in Tampa. We're talking about how Florida politics and Florida government works. And if you've got a question or a comment for Paula, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. For a long time, she was a Republican. Forever, she was a Republican until January 2017, when she left the Republican Party and became an independent. So we've got a new conservative Supreme Court. Governor DeSantis has appointed three members of the Federalist Society to the Florida Supreme Court, replacing three liberal members. So does that mean that we're likely to see more gerrymandering after the 2020 census?
Likely. It's, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I don't understand why when somebody's elected governor, that they don't look at our very purple state of Florida and say, you know, I want fair-minded people on the Supreme Court. I want people who are not driven by ideology, but driven by following the law and the Constitution of the state of Florida. If that was me, I'd be picking very well-respected judges who have very fair records instead of these extreme ideologues. And that's concerning to me because he's not only picked very ideological judges, but he picked young ones, so they can be on there for a very long time.
I should say that we're on Facebook Live, too. If you go to the WMNF News website, you'll be able to see this interview with Paula Dockery live, and you'll be able to share it with your friends once it's recorded at 12 o'clock. Once it's finished being recorded at 12 o'clock. Thanks to Blanny Whalen. She is videotaping this for us. And let's take some phone calls from our listeners. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to go to Susan, who's in Lakeland. Hi, Susan. You're on with Paula Dockery.
Hi, Rob. I'm from Lakeland originally. I mean, I've lived in the Lakeland Highlands since the early 60s. I went to school with Carl Dockery from, like, probably kindergarten on. I love Paula. I love what she's done. And I agree with everything that she's had to say, except for one. Lawton Child came up with Florida Healthy Kids, or Florida Kid Care, at a time when we were having our second child, and we didn't really have insurance. And it covered everything for her. So, you know, he may have voted with Republicans at that time. I might have. It was a different time back then. I mean, I was a Yellow Dog Democrat probably until Reagan was elected. And then I moved on. But I just wanted to say I love you, Paula. I see all your posts on Facebook and Instagram and whatever. And Rob, I've been listening to you since the early 1980s, and I've loved you ever since.
Hey, Susan.
And that's it.
Thanks, Susan.
Before you leave, what did we disagree on with Lawton Child?
Oh, the Lawton Child thing. I don't think he voted Republican down the line. You know, he was a Democrat, but he was a Yellow Dog Democrat.
Well, we were talking about Dixiecrats, and I don't think you meant to say that Lawton Childs was a Dixiecrat.
I don't think he was a Dixiecrat. No. He may have been, you know, early on, because he graduated with my father from Lakeland High School.
Well, Susan, the reason I live in Lakeland is I was married once before, and my ex-husband worked for Lawton Childs. So it was Lawton Childs that brought me to Lakeland.
There you go.
Yeah, and I have a great deal of respect for him, and thought he was a great guy, and liked how he behaved in all the positions, from U.S. Senator to governor. And I think that he was reasonable. He was easy to work for. He did have a Democratic ideology, but when he was governor, he was really good at working with, because his last 2 years as governor were my first 2 years in the House, and I was invited to the governor's mansion, and I wasn't the only Republican, and he knew that he had to work the entire legislature instead of just pushing through his ideology. So he understood politics, and he understood respecting everybody's constituents when he was doing it.
Yeah, and I respected him, and I respect all the work you've done. And ever since this Trump thing, I know you've disappointed some of your constituents, former constituents, but you've made most of us very happy.
Well, thank you.
All right.
That's all I've got to say.
Susan, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Carl Dockery being...
Stepson.
All right. You're listening to a live interview here on WMNF in Tampa. Our guest is now newspaper columnist Paula Dockery. And let's go to David in Clearwater. Hi, David. You're on with Paula Dockery.
Hey, Paula. When you were in the legislature, did you sign that no new tax oath that was put out by that really weird guy?
I think you're talking about Grover Norquist, and I think that in my first few years in the House, I did, because it's something they wanted you to sign every year, and I think towards the end of my being in the legislature, I did not.
Okay, and next question would be, what did you think of the new tax laws that have been passed by our current administration in Washington?
I think they're terrible. Go ahead.
They benefited the little people at all?
No. I think it was a billionaire tax cut. I think that it benefited businesses and those in the very upper echelons. And then the businesses had said that it was going to trickle down. They were going to give bonuses. So right when the bill was being discussed, a few companies, corporations came out and did that. Once the bill passed, that dried up. People didn't get raises. Around tax time, people realized that there wasn't a windfall for them. And it's amusing to me in a disturbing way, though, that some of the Republicans are campaigning this year on their successful tax cut when it didn't benefit the vast majority of Americans.
Well, they seem to be doing that at the moment, but that's only to get enough money from the people that did benefit from it to run all the campaign ads, which will not contain truth.
The other thing that was disturbing is a lot of the corporations use the money to buy back stocks. So when stock prices are going up, they're benefiting yet again over the people who sold when they had no idea that the stock market was going to continue to go up. And really, it's kind of baffling that it is when you've got President Trump threatening tariffs to all of our neighbors and countries across the, globe.
Sure, all the brown people. All the people from the asshole country.
Well, and China. I mean, the tariff with China is really hurting our farmers.
All right, David, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, David, for your call. John writes this question. How do these facilities, such as the Homestead facility where the children are being held, how do they get away with not letting a member of Congress inside for an inspection of the site? You mentioned the three Democratic members of Congress who were trying to look at what's going on in Homestead. They were turned away.
I don't know. They have private security, and they refused to let them out. They said that they had a policy in place where you had to have 2 weeks' notice. But I can't imagine why and how they can turn people away. It might be because they're private, but there are other facilities in Texas where some congressmen tried to get in, and this was very early in Trump's administration. I think it was Congressman Merkel. Is there,
right.
Yeah. And he was turned away, and I'm not sure if that was a private facility or not.
On your website, you publish a list of the perhaps hundreds of awards that you've gotten, and just looking at the range of organizations that have given you awards, the Christian Coalition of Florida, a group called Lower Taxes Now, the Associated Builders and Contractors, and the Florida Education Association. I mean, groups from the left to the right have given you awards for your accomplishments in the state legislature.
Yeah, well, I was in for 16 years, and keep in mind, at the beginning of my term in office, the Republican Party wasn't like what the Republican Party is like now, and so there was more reasonableness, more common sense, and I think if I had one strength when I was in the legislature, it was that I tried very hard to bring all sides together and realize that even though I started with a piece of legislation that had specifics in it, that if somebody came to me and said, I disagree with this because of this, and if they made the case and I said, you know, I think you're right. I think mine isn't as strong as yours, or mine has some unintended consequences, we would change it. So I know that nowadays compromise and collaboration are bad words, but back then it worked. When it was 61-59, it worked pretty darn well.
Let's go to David, who's in Pasco County. David, you're on with Paula Dockery.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Good. How are you, David?
I'm well, thank you. And I applaud your consideration from turning to a Republican to an independent. I did the same thing, but I turned from Democrat to independent. And one of my questions for you is, do you foresee a time when independents will be allowed to vote in primaries?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I'm actually registered NPA, which is no party affiliation. And so every election cycle, I go during that period where you're allowed to actually pick a party so you can vote. And so it's a little extra work. You have to go through some paperwork and make sure you don't miss the deadlines. And then I pick a party and vote in that primary. And then after the general, or after that election's over, because in the general, it doesn't matter what you're registered, I switch back to NPA because I want that to be kind of my resting place. But I did attempt when I was in the legislature to open up our primaries, not completely to where Democrats can vote in the Republican primary and Republicans can vote in the Democratic primary, but that if you belong to a party like Independents or NPA, no party, that you could pick a party to vote in the primary. And I did it with a Democrat. I was a Republican, Democrat Dave Ehrenberg, who's now the state's attorney down in Palm Beach. So we tried to make it a bipartisan thing, and neither party really wanted to go with it, but the Republicans put up the bigger fight. And so that never even got a hearing. It didn't even get a hearing in committee, let alone a vote on the floor.
I'll have to check into that NPA thing.
There is a constitutional amendment out there now that you might want to surf the internet and get their website and sign it, but it's an open primary constitutional amendment. And so if enough voters get that on the ballot, then maybe the voters of Florida will be able to change the system, because really NPAs are almost a third of all registered voters in the state of Florida right now.
It's the fastest growing segment of voters. Yeah. All right, David, thanks a lot.
One more question, please.
Sure, go ahead.
How do you feel about global warming? I mean, I heard today on the news that the permafrost in some areas is melting 40 years ahead of schedule, and the inevitable sea rise and the global warming, and how do you think it's going to affect the state of Florida?
Oh, I think it's very scary. I mean, we're surrounded by water, and the elected officials down in South Florida are realizing the danger that they're in. And of course, everybody wants to build closer and closer to the coast, so that could wipe out a lot of the population of South Florida. I think it's it should be one of the top issues we're discussing. But during the 8 years of Rick Scott, he wouldn't even let the folks in charge of the agencies to deal with this even use the words global warming or climate change. And it was so bizarre that at one point they would come and testify before legislative committees, and there was a, I don't remember who it was, but one of the committee members kept trying to get them to say the words, and he wouldn't do it. And they had it on film. It was almost comical how the guy, you could almost see his mind say, if I use these words, I'm going to get fired. And how awful that is, that we had a governor of the state of Florida for 8 years who denied it was happening, who wouldn't let his agencies even discuss it. And it's something that's going to have, is already having a very strong detrimental effect on us.
All right, David, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you're listening to a live interview with Paula Dockery, former state senator. So, Paula, the governor just signed a piece of legislation last week or 2 weeks ago that would make it harder to amend the state constitution. There's some big issues that people are going around the state gathering signatures for next year. What did you make of HB 5, which limits the ability of citizens to put initiatives on the ballot?
You know, for most of the time I was in the legislature, and for the 6 years I've been out, every year is an assault on citizens' initiatives. Now, I'm going to get a little wonky here. There are five ways to amend the Constitution in the state of Florida. The citizens really only have input on one in terms of getting something on the ballot. And what I've noticed is when citizens come to the legislature year after year asking us to put this in law, not in the Constitution, but in law, and we turn them down, and they get so frustrated that after many, many years, they say, okay, we're going to take it into our own hands. We're going to put it on the ballot. It's really hard to get something on the ballot. There are so many hoops they have to jump through. And so many years ago, they formed this commission because they thought citizens were getting too many issues on the ballot. This was right after I was involved in getting high-speed rail on the ballot. And so, and I stood at public places with a pad of petitions asking people to sign them, you know, and for every two you get signed, you get one person telling you no and cussing at you or whatever. And so it's not a real pleasant job, but it was really hard to do. But they were determined and they got things on the ballot. So they formed this commission, and I was originally not appointed to it. And I went to the leadership and said, hey, look, I'm the only one who actually has worked on one of these. I have some knowledge of it. Put me on there. And we went around the state and did public hearings. And the citizens were saying, don't mess with our right to amend our constitution. And they would politely listen, not say anything back. And then in the end, everything that they wanted to come out of that commission was to make it harder for citizens to put things on the ballot. Meanwhile, I did a little survey, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, but most of the amendments to the Constitution have not been done by citizens. They've been done by the legislature. And yet, we don't hear how bad it is for the legislature to amend the Constitution. We hear every time there's a citizens' initiative that our Constitution is getting cluttered. And that disingenuousness just drives me crazy. So now, Ron DeSantis, who we all want to give a shot at, you know, saying he's our governor and we're happy with what he's doing. Now he comes out and says that the ballot was too cluttered last time and we had to do something, and that's why he signed House Bill 5. Well, House Bill 5 only affects the petition gathering, and most of the amendments that were on the ballot last time were not put on by citizens. Citizens were only two of the 12 that appeared. So for the 16% of issues that appeared on the ballot, he's passing this bill to make it even harder. And so I think it's such a thinly veiled excuse for fixing a problem that doesn't exist.
Now, the Republicans who voted for this bill say it's billionaires that are putting these issues on the ballot. That if we had medical marijuana one time, or if we had more money for land conservation, it was billionaires that were buying their way onto the ballot. That's their complaint.
Okay, so ban assault weapons now. There's no billionaires funding that. That's
that might be on the ballot next year. They're collecting signatures now.
And let me talk about that. In full disclosure, I was asked to serve on the advisory committee for this, and I said yes. So I am officially affiliated with them, although unfortunately I haven't done as much to help them as I'd like to. But first you have to get enough ballots, a petition signed, so that the Supreme Court will review your language. And they've done that. They've reached the 77,000. In fact, they have 103,000. And then it could sit at the Supreme Court for a long time. And then we don't know with this new Supreme Court what they're going to say. But they're really only supposed to be looking at two things. Is the summary accurate for what it does? And is it confusing? And so theoretically, it should go on the ballot. In the meantime, they're going to need to continue collecting petitions because it could sit there for 4 months, and they only have 8 months left to get the 766,000 petitions they need by February 1st, 2020. So anybody out there who wants to support or at least have the banning of assault weapons on the ballot for Floridians to decide, please go to Bawn, BAWNFL.org, and you can download a petition. What this House Bill 5 does, it says when you're hiring a professional to get your petition signed, there's all these new stipulations, and they have to be from Florida. So let's help this grassroots effort by getting petitions sent in that don't require a paid petition gatherer. And let's just help them. You know, if you have some friends, family members who you think want to help on this, print out a few petitions or send them the link and then just send them in. And let's get it on the ballot. It's polling at 68% or higher. So I know that the people of the state of Florida would like to see assault weapons banned. And it's a very simple petition. That's on the website as well, and you can read it for yourself. It doesn't take away anyone's handguns. It doesn't violate the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner myself. But it does say we don't need to have weapons of war used on the streets of Florida.
Do you think the governor is acting in good faith in signing the bill? I mean, is he really trying to make Florida better by signing HB 5?
Well, I think that his rationale was disingenuous, but he has been truthful in saying that he wants to curb citizens' initiatives. I don't. I think that if we have a document that belongs to the citizens of the state of Florida, that we could get rid of the other ways of amending the Constitution and leave the citizens' initiative there. It's their document. And then, you know, it has to pass on the ballot, and they raise that from 50% plus one to 60%. There are efforts to raise that to 66%, 66 and a third.
Yeah, because the governor wants to make it even harder to amend the Constitution.
Yeah.
He said that the other day in signing the bill. Here's an email that says, is there a chance that Paula Dockery would run for Senate or for governor?
Not any time in the near future. I'm kind of enjoying life.
Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Taylor in Tampa. Hi, Taylor. You're on with Paula Dockery. Hi, Taylor. Oh, they hung up. All right, let's go to David in Tampa. David, you're on with Paula Dockery.
Oh, hi.
Hi, David.
For bringing Paula on the show today. I was just curious. I make this argument a fair amount with Trump supporters, and they don't seem to believe it, but I think that Trump is like the real true rhino, and I think that he's kind of hijacked the Republican Party, and I'm just wondering if Paula could talk about that, and forgive me if you already mentioned it because I tuned in late.
No, but isn't it crazy? Here's a guy who for most of his life has supported Democrats, who for most of his life has been pro-choice, who for most of his life has espoused everything that the Democrats espoused, and then he decides to run for president, and a few years prior to that, he starts getting very involved with the Republican Party, and then he grabs onto a couple issues that appeal to Republicans, and they just sort of erase his whole past. And it is rather amazing that he's been able to transform the Republican Party the way he has. Now, keep in mind, over a long period of maybe 15 to 20 years, it was the party was shifting. The Tea Party had a lot to do with that. The Koch brothers. And here's another thing. Out-of-state money, when Governor DeSantis talks about out-of-state money taking over these citizens' initiatives, his largest financial contributors were the Koch brothers from Kansas. So, and of course, DeSantis has a big tie with President Trump. So it is amazing that that Trump was able to take a party that was shifting hard right and just adopt a couple of issues that were important to them, and his entire past has been erased. And for the evangelicals, that's the one that makes me really want to pull out my hair. It's like, how does a group that used to not support even Republicans, if we were for gambling, get so behind a guy who's been divorced several times, rumored to have had many affairs, probably paid for some abortions, owned casinos? So it's, just mind-boggling.
It's the greatest con of all time, in my opinion. It's just amazing to me.
It is.
Yeah.
All right, David, thanks a lot.
Thank you for your question.
And Chip in Tampa writes, how much credit do you give Fox News for the level of vitriol and extremism in the modern-day Republican Party?
A lot. I stopped watching Fox News even as a Republican because I just felt like it was insulting my intelligence and didn't understand how so many people, and I know their demographic is it's a lot of the older folks. Fox News has been very dangerous. And what's interesting right now is there have been one or two, now it's growing to three, four, five people on Fox News. And I only know this from Twitter because I'm still not watching Fox News, that are starting to point out where Trump is just absolutely wrong. And I don't know if there's a shift in Fox News or if some of his statements and actions have just been so over the top that it's even too much for them. But Fox News has been very detrimental to the Republican Party and to politics in our country as a whole.
Yeah, I think Chris Wallace and Shep Smith have been somewhat skeptical of some of the things that President Trump has done. Well, you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Norman in Clearwater. Hi, Norman. You're on WMNF. What's your question?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Keep up the great job. And Paula, thank you for your great work also.
Thanks, Norman.
I don't know if you're aware of it, but in Pinellas County, I would assume in other counties, believe it or not, people are being charged the tourism development tax here in Pinellas County is 6%. And these, my family was charged during Hurricane Irma, the 6% tax. And other evacuees that stayed in a hotel motel having and seeking shelter. I don't know if you're aware of that or how many other people are. I've been contacting my local representatives and state reps. And as of this date, I've got little if any response to for them to waive this during a hurricane. I just wonder what your comments are. Might be on that.
So you're talking about short-term rentals?
That is correct. Well, I'm talking about, as you know, if you stay in a hotel, motel.
Right.
Yes, that is true.
Okay, so I own a condo up in Tallahassee that I'm trying to sell if anybody's looking for one. anytime I rent it for less than, I think, 6 months, then I get charged this. I have to pay a tax on the rental. And people rent my condo usually during session, which is 4 months. So I understand the concept and what you're talking about. I think that, and I'm surprised, that it hasn't been waived for those who are dislocated because of a storm, hurricane, or any other kind of natural disaster. So I really am surprised that that didn't happen because I've seen it happen, I believe, under Governor Jeb Bush when I was in the legislature. So I think that is an issue for your local representative to check out. But I would say, you know, write or call Governor DeSantis and say, you know, if you haven't done this already, you've got the power as the governor to waive this during hurricanes and whatnot. We're already suffering. We don't need to be paying this extra as well.
That's exactly right. Thank you for your great work. Most appreciated.
Sure.
All right, Norman. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Lenny in Englewood. Lenny, you're on with Paula Dockery. Hi, Lenny.
Hi. Paula, I read your columns whenever they appear in my paper, and I'm very grateful for you. I'd like to go back to the amendment thing, and one thing that really, really just amazes me is how, with this last election when the Amendment 4 was allowing ex-felons to vote, and that passed overwhelmingly, but yet Florida elected DeSantis, who said outright that he was against it. So how do you expect to have your amendment implemented if you vote for people who are opposed to it? It makes no sense to me at all.
All right, Lenny, great question.
Lenny,
we have 30 seconds.
That is a great question. Oh, are we down to 30 seconds?
Yes.
That is a great question. I could go on this forever because so many of the amendments that people spent so much time getting on the ballot, and then once it got on the ballot, trying to get it passed, then it gets to the legislature, and most of them are self-executing, but the legislature interferes and adds modifiers to them. And so the amendment one for land conservation, they've been ignoring. They haven't funded the this last one on felons' right to vote, restoration of rights. They really messed with, and it's really a shame. And it's really going to take citizens to let them know they're unhappy. They're going to do whatever they can get away with, unless there's a price to pay at the ballot box. So the best thing I can do, and the best thing you can do, is educate voters that these elected officials weren't paying attention to our voice, and we should vote them out.
Paula Dockery, thank you so much for coming by. It's always an honor to see you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and thanks everyone for listening.
This is WMNF in Tampa. You can find more at pauladockery.com.